Hello to listeners both new and long term. Quick note, Elise and I have finally launched our Patreon podcast. It's called We Couldn't Help But Wonder, Still Wondering. You can find it on the Patreon website and find an easy link through our website, wecouldn'thelpbutwonder.com. To those who have already subscribed, our deepest thanks, and to those who haven't yet, come check us out. For only $4 a month, we'll be breaking down a new romantic comedy set in New York City in 3 to 4 episodes, with the same humor and detail we've brought to over 100 episodes of this podcast. We've already covered When Harry Met Sally and are in the midst of You've Got Mail. We're really excited to share this new series with you. All right, here's the show. Well, hello, Elise Castle.
Hey, Mike Jensen.
How's it going today?
Good. We have, like, we're recording virtually right now, which is what we've been doing since post-pandemic, but it's a weird setup today. I have my iPad on FaceTime, and so you're staring at my profile.
I was going to say, you can't even look at me right now.
Yeah. It feels like that one day that we had to record awkwardly in your bedroom with, like, me staring.
You were behind me.
Yeah. It was a very weird situation. Yeah, but here we are. Chapter three,
directed by Michael Patrick King, written by Julie Rottenberg, ampersand Elisa Zaritsky.
What does that mean again?
It means they write together.
Okay.
So, you know, a little behind the credits fact, when it says A-N-D, it means they wrote and they wrote and then they came together. And when there's an ampersand, it means they wrote as a team.
Mm.
It also means they get paid as one person. So save a little money as well.
Rude.
Also, two things. I feel like I say Elisa's name wrong every time. I feel like I've called her Eliza. I've called her Elisa. Like, I've called her every wrong name.
Mm-hmm.
It's Elisa. It sort of sounds like Lisa. It's like your name, but with an at the end.
Mm-hmm. Elisa with an A, not Elisa with an E. Because Elisa with an A goes eh, not I.
Very good.
I got a message on Instagram that says that there can never be enough musical theater references. I think that's
always going to be someone.
Yeah, I think that's the only one I'm going to make today.
That's good. Well, you know, don't hold yourself back. I do want to say that at this point in life, though, I do love that my iPad predicted the last names Rottenberg and Zaritsky.
Yeah, mine predicts LTW now.
I like that. We're teaching the machines.
Yes.
So we start out with someone just screaming Carrie's name over and over again.
And that someone
is Lisette.
And I wrote they are around Bryant Park, maybe? And they are around Bryant
they
Park.
They are. And, you know, I thought about this, and I kind of wanted to talk about Bryant Park for just a moment, because we think of Bryant Park as just that place. But I was thinking, for those that don't live in New York City, Bryant Park has been, like, a moment in Sex and the City, in this universe, many times. Like, this is where Fashion Week used to happen. So when they had the scenes that took place at Fashion Week, that was at Bryant Park. Bryant Park is also where the ladies came together when Carrie had the keys because she was getting into Aiden's place and they were having a quick catch-up lunch. Also, right there at Bryant Park is where the wedding would have taken place, because that's where the library is. So where Carrie bashed big with the flowers was right there. I was just thinking about the fact that, like, if you don't live here, you don't know that so much of this series has taken place right there. Anyways, I was just thinking about the things that took place here.
The picnic was where she was in the Heidi dress?
I think that was Madison Square Park was where the Heidi dress was, which is another place that we go back to over and over again.
And more importantly, Bryant Park is the place that last week I ordered a bowl from Cava and waited 10 minutes and chopped for. I ordered it online and I was waiting and I was like, well, I'm never ordering online again. And I was like, well, maybe I should go to the right place to pick it up.
That's really funny. I once ordered I thought I was being so smart at the airport and ordered a coffee through the app for Starbucks. And I'd ordered from a completely different gate.
Well, that's actually a thing on Buy Nothing groups on Facebook. I always see it on the Buy Nothing Upper East Side group. That's like, accidentally ordered a coffee to the wrong Starbucks. Feel free to pick it up. It's under this name. So
I was really sad.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're setting up the tent for her jewelry show. We find out that she's one of Bulgari's top picks.
Yeah, and I liked her Bergdorf Goodman windbreaker that she's wearing. She's wearing this windbreaker with Bergdorf Goodman, like, patchwork on it. And I tried to look it up, and I think the costume designers actually made it for Sex and the City. And just like that.
It felt very 1994, which I guess is on brand right now.
Yeah, and Lisette is probably Gen Z,
I would imagine.
Yeah, and in listening to Michael Patrick King's podcast, they talk about how are we going to get the listeners to remember who Lisette was? Because, you know, how can we do that in a subtle way. And they say that with Carrie making the comment of, oh, it's weird to not see you outside of our building. So it's like, oh yeah, that's who that is.
Yeah, they did a good job of that. I remembered who she was, but I get what the task would have been. And we found out that Carrie's on the way to record the audio for her new book. And, you know, I think that it's interesting. I think that I almost didn't notice this until like the third time that I watched the episode, that they each kind of apologize.
Mm-hmm.
They each are like, oh, I feel so silly because. And I do think that that is the thing that we all do more than we should. I think that we all have the tendency to be like, even when we talk about, you know, doing a podcast, we tend to be like, well, we started a long time ago, or, you know, it's blah, 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 blah. And you know what? We do a podcast and it's awesome. And she does jewelry and it's awesome. And Carrie's recording a book and that's awesome. We should stop apologizing for the things that we do, I think.
Yeah, I think that Lizette is apologizing. Okay, I don't think this. I heard this on the podcast. She was apologizing more because she got there early to watch them set it up. But I totally agree with you. I actually, years ago, I used to write a blog and I wrote one about this because as performers, whenever anyone's saying like, so what are you doing? You're like, oh, it's just this dumb little thing. Like, it's not important. And why don't we just, yeah, celebrate our wins?
Yeah, doing an awesome thing. And you know what? You're Carrie Bradshaw. There's nothing to be embarrassed about that.
And you're Mike Jensen.
And you're actually Elise Castle.
I'm actually not. There's something we need to talk about.
Reveal. And she rips off the mask. And then we get Seema emerging from her townhouse and we have a purse snatching. And I do think it's funny that no one helps and her sort of thing of like, stop him. Why is no one stopping him? No one stop. Why? You know, it's kind of a funny scene.
Well, I had a couple things about that. Number one, I think in New York City, they talk about writing the scene because crime was up at the time. And also in New York City, sometimes, depending on the situation, you don't help because you don't know if the person, like what the person is capable of doing, you know?
Sure.
And sometimes it's like, okay, no person is getting hurt in this moment. Bags are replaceable. But in this moment, I think no one is helping Seema because there are only two old ladies standing there and a man with six dogs.
So many dogs. And she gets kind of stuck with the dog walker there.
Which is funny because I sent a picture to Mike randomly yesterday and I hadn't even watched this episode yet. And I was actually crossing the street to walk to the Wexley's apartment to take a picture. And there was a man walking with six identical dogs. And I didn't even know that I was going to see that happen.
It's a very New York thing.
Mm-hmm.
Seema calls Carrie from the car and is hoping the thief took the wallet and ditched the bag like they used to.
And she's smoking in the car, which is just a thing that, like, Seema smokes everywhere. She's the new Carrie in that sense. And, it was a Birkin, which is really important because she got it before there was a wait list. Mike, are you familiar at all with the Hermes shopping process?
No.
And how you get a Birkin bag or a Kelly bag. Those are the two. So I actually know a little bit about this because of social media, and then I just was diving down a rabbit hole one day. So Hermes is the company that makes the Birkin bag. Birkin bags currently retail for like a new Birkin bag. It's around $13,000. However, if Seema wanted to rebuy this one because it was probably not made anymore, it could be upwards to $300,000. Who knows? But how it works at Hermes is you have to build a relationship with your shopping assistant before they will even offer you a Birkin bag. So you have to go to the store and kind of build up a shopping history. And that could be like buying shoes or buying these things called twillies, which are kind of like little scarves that you can wrap around your Birkin bag. And then once you build this relationship, your shopping assistant or personal shopper, sales associate, that's the word, will kind of know what you're looking for. And then they may text you and say, okay, it's here. And then they bring you into a room with like white gloves and show you the Birkin. And in a way, you almost have to buy it because it's this whole thing. But you have to spend a ton of money to just even get the opportunity to spend a ton of money.
It's really hard for me because I don't want to belittle anyone's passion. Like, I don't want to put down anyone's. To have this stolen, I'm sure, would be a very upsetting thing. And I also just think that it's so ridiculous at the same time. So I'm very ambivalent about this particular subject.
Yeah, and I think it's more because it was the first big purchase she made with her money. But also, I don't know if anyone has actually bought a Birkin. Like, is it true? Like, can you just walk into the store and buy one if you have the money? Or do you? I don't know. But the wait list. Maybe she could before. Maybe that's what she's saying, is before you had to go through all this bull roar, she was able to just do it.
So we get to the Arbor School, and Naya is doing LTW's documentary tomorrow, and Lisa wants to thank Miranda for setting it up.
So this was the moment where I thought about what we talked about last week. This is how they're bringing Naya into the group.
Yes. I'm very excited about all of this, I will say.
Yeah.
This was fun watching this happen.
Yeah, and then we see Principal St. Louis Sushi.
What's that?
The guy who plays the principal is St. Louis Sushi from Somebody Somewhere.
Got it. Yes, yes, yes. This is Tim Bagley, and fun fact, he's been in every TV show ever made. I'm just kidding, but he does so much work.
No, I saw it, and you know how it is for me to recognize someone is insane. And I think it's only because I just watched Somebody Somewhere, but I even had to double check myself to say, like, is that the guy from Somebody Somewhere?
That
and
is
so
him,
I looked
yeah.
at his IMDb, and it's just, yeah, every TV show possibly made.
Legitimately everything ever made. Our friend Katie once saw him in an improv show and was very impressed by it. I guess it's sort of legendary, and I don't know what it was, but yeah, he's a big deal in the improv world and works a ton. And he's talking about an incident that has happened, and this is where we found out that there is a MILF list going yeah. around.
Yeah, and
you made a face.
I don't know. This whole storyline, I mean, this storyline, this part doesn't bother me yet, because now it just seems like a relatively adult way to handle a situation. The principal, or I think he's probably the principal, maybe he's not, maybe they just refer to him as Greg, so maybe he's the president of the PTA, addressing the parents in a room saying this inappropriate thing is happening. And that's all. How I think the storyline should end is they should find out who wrote the list, and that person's parents should punish them.
You know, and they talked about how this storyline is in response to the current state of schools perhaps overcorrecting, or perhaps taking certain things too seriously. And one can argue, and I will have some probably unpopular opinions about this as we go along. But yeah, we're just setting up that there's a list going around. I do like that he scolds them for talking.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're in the recording studio. So this is chapter 3. She's doing the audio for her book, and she's trying to record chapter 3, which is the chapter about Big's death. And does she need some time? And Amanda's there. And apparently we found out that she's had actors record her other books, which I think is interesting.
That usually does happen, unless it's a memoir. Oh, but I'm assuming most of... Well, if this is
They've all been nonfiction, but I guess not exactly memoir.
Right. Yeah.
And any of the Julianne's would do.
And she needs to hit her T's, but stop popping her pee.
Which is a thing. We pop our P's all the time. I do, at least.
Did you just think of all my ladies popping their like this? My neck.
I did not.
My back. That's all I can think
but
about.
Now I will. Yeah. Okay. And there's a BO issue.
Yeah, there's a BO issue. And before this, I noticed in the booth that one of the two gentlemen was double masking. And I just took note of that because we haven't really talked about COVID in this season at all. And like, I think if it was just a mask, maybe I wouldn't have thought it. And maybe I was like, okay, they're trying to sprinkle that in. But he was double masking, which made me think, okay, there's something to this, or this is going to be something.
And that was another thing they talked about, was that they hadn't really talked about COVID all that much. And there were a couple mentions in the first season, mm-hmm. but I think there had been a purposeful choice to like not do too much
right.
COVID in the first season.
Jimmy has stinky pits. It's like a whole thing that they talk about is like Jimmy's stinky pits. And I kind of felt bad for Jimmy. You know, I always, whenever I see these roles, I think about the breakdown that goes out for the actor, where it's like, it'll be like podcast sound engineer. Looks like he probably has smelly armpits. Like, I don't know. Because yeah. you know, I've gotten those before. I've gotten like the commercial audition that says like average looking person, maybe slightly on the bigger side. And you're like, and then you know that like your agent just looked at it and was like, oh, Elise Kessel.
Perfect.
Sounds great for this role.
She's going to book this one.
Yeah. And Carrie begins chapter 3, and you can read it if you pause, but then I realize she's reading it out loud, so I don't have to
I
read it.
I did the same thing.
Yeah.
I paused and was like, I'm going to write this down. And yeah. I'm like, oh, she's reading it out loud. We don't actually yeah. have to write it down. We found out that they booked the studio for 5 days.
5 days? My God, any of the Julianne's could have banged this out in 2.
It's a book about your husband passing. We want to make sure you have enough time. okay? It's a lot.
I'm gonna go get you some mint tea.
Oh, Amanda, thanks. I don't want you here waiting on me every day.
Ugh, I wish. Sadly, it's back to the publisher minds for me, but I texted you Gary's info in case you have any problems, okay?
Okay.
So this is obviously gonna be hard, and Carrie wants to change the writing. There are things with Carrie in this episode that I do kind of want to take issue with, but will also try to approach with understanding that this is a hard situation for her. And he basically tells her to call, like, to slow down. They have 5 days.
And then she gets stressed out that they have 5 days.
Yes.
And I do think that Gary overall is a great person. He just seems like a nice guy.
I have a back and forth with this. There are moments that I'm on his side and moments that I really get mad at him. But we'll get to that in scenes yet to come. And now we have running lines with Miranda and Che.
Yeah. So then you're right. Miranda's is helping Che with their lines. And I love how bad of an actor Cynthia Nixon can be.
Yeah, it's her as a really good actor playing a really bad actor.
Right. And how is it going, my little cannoli? Which is just,
I don't know. Whole idea that, like, well, you have to cry here. And Che being like, well, I don't necessarily have to cry. Well, it says that you cry, and then it says that you cry harder. And then he says he hates it when you cry. And it was funny them sort of talking about how she's reading this as a lawyer. That, mm-hmm. like, according to the contract, you're going to have to cry here.
Yeah, and also, what was interesting is Miranda is reading it off of her phone. And we realize that Miranda hates this new phone. She says she hates the new phone and the type size. And is this the first time we're kind of seeing an age difference between Miranda and Che? Where it's like, is there an age difference?
I wasn't sure exactly what this was supposed to be signaling, other than does Anne Just Like That have a contract with Apple where they have to say bad things about Androids? Because they do kind of go after the Android
episode. Yeah, and I think it's that Miranda had an iPhone before she lost it at the beach, and now her replacement phone is an Android. I will say my mom has an Android, and I don't think it's all Androids. I think it's like the cheap Android that you get as either a replacement phone or like the free one. That there are times when I call her and it never shows up. Like, it does kind of misbehave quite a bit.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then did you notice that Che pours more coffee out of a measuring cup?
I think it's not coffee. I think that it is blood orange juice.
Did you notice that Che pours more blood orange juice out of a measuring cup? They do say that on the podcast.
I only know that from the podcast. Yeah, because watching it, I'm like, what the hell is she pouring? That's such a weird looking drink.
Yeah, I thought it was like really chunky coffee from a measuring cup. Okay, never mind.
And Che feels like the crying is a signal that their non-binary life is sad mm-hmm. when it isn't. And I understand that. And I understand this is a continuation of the idea that the show is not going the way that they want it to go. But sometimes we cry, and it doesn't mean that we're sad about our existence. It's just because we're crying.
I mean, I cry out of frustration. I cry. Sometimes I cry because I forgot to turn in my cash out report at the end of my shift. But sometimes I just cry like when I'm talking about something serious because it's hard for me to get it out.
Sure. I'm almost going to guarantee that I'm going to cry before this episode is over. Oh, but we'll get there when we get there.
Looking forward to it. And then something I came up with, which I think is fun and you're going to hate, is one of the lines is that Tony Danza says is that he just wants Che to be his little girl cannoli. And I think for the show, I'm going to call him Tony Dadza.
Sure.
Thank you.
And we also just established that Brady has been ghosting Miranda. That is, according to Miranda, that Brady's not been in touch.
Oh, and Che just says he's, you know, having a good time in Europe with his girlfriend.
Which I guess is also an important thing to establish, that in Che's mind, there's not an issue happening here. That Brady's just in Europe with his girlfriend and mm-hmm. everything's fine. Mm-hmm. And then we get to Naya being interviewed. And you know what? Everyone, look up Constance Baker Motley. Super, super fascinating woman that I didn't know a whole lot about. She was the first woman to argue in front of the Supreme Court. She was the first female Manhattan borough president. The first African-American woman to serve in the federal judiciary. Incredible human being. I spent a good amount of time looking into her. Not what this episode is about, so we'll move on. But I wanted to give a shout out to Constance Baker Motley.
Well, and also a shout out for them like, once again, putting, we talked about this last episode, but, you know, kind of inserting these things where it makes you think and makes you do a little bit of research.
For sure. Absolutely. And Naya's mic slips. I don't know. Okay. I want to not complain about every storyline because I get that this guy is hot and it's fun that, like, this hot guy is going to put his hands down her blouse. She can probably get that mic on her own, right?
Yeah. It's interesting because when I have had a mic put on me for on-camera stuff, a lot of times, especially if it's, like, a male sound person, they will ask either, like, or the film I just worked on when I was doing script supervising, they had me help the female person. Like, the male sound designer was like, can you help her with this? Or they'll ask. I mean, I guess with something just slipping, though, it would be different.
And I guess my other issue with this.
But yeah, she could have just went down her shirt and grabbed it.
She could have gotten it. And I guess my thing is, we've now established, like, we have the one guy who's behind the scenes doing sound who is smelly. And then we have the other sound guy who is super hot and gets to stick his hands down her blouse. And I guess it's just funny and I shouldn't take it so seriously.
Are you offended because you've done sound before?
As a sound person, I don't know which side of the spectrum I'm on.
Yeah, and another thing I wrote was, she makes the joke that you're going to have to take her out to dinner first. And then he's like, can I really take you out to dinner? And she says no. And all I thought of was, Mike would have said yes. I just thought you would have liked this guy a lot.
I would have liked this guy, and I think I would have said yes. And I think that what's happening here is just that we're establishing that Naya doesn't think she's in a place to be dating. Because then she sort of says to Lisa, like, he's hot, right? I mean, I'm not in the headspace to date someone. And Lisa, in return, is like, yeah, I think you are in the headspace. So give him your number and let's get to lunch because we're running late.
Yeah, but we didn't establish in the last episode that Naya and Andre had officially separated, correct?
I think we kind of had. She was throwing his stuff out.
Yeah, I guess. But, you know, people get back together after throwing things away. I just didn't know. This was like we found out that they officially had separated.
Yeah, so they are not together anymore. And we get to lunch with Charlotte asking Carrie, you know, how things are going and that she'll be there for Carrie if Carrie needs her. And the way you've moved on, we're all so proud of you. And I think that that is to set up the idea that Carrie's going to feel like my friends are proud that I've moved on and therefore I have to have moved on.
Mm. And this is the scene that, well, first of all, we're at the Evelyn Hotel, which is on 7 East 27th Street. I've never been there. And also, this was the scene that during the teaser and or trailer, we weren't sure who Charlotte was talking to. And now we know.
And LTW and Naya arrive. And I love it. I just love like getting different combinations of these women together. Mm-hmm. Like, makes me really happy.
Yeah. And LTW got the MILF list.
Well, I like that. It's the idea of like, we've been stalling. Everyone look at your menus. We have to order right away.
Right.
And then the list comes through and she says, ordering can wait.
Yeah. And then we get the MILF list. Carrie makes a comment about them being Woodward and Bernstein, who are the Watergate peeps.
Correct.
And we find out that LTW is number 2, Charlotte is number 3, Finn's stepmom is number 1, and then Naya's a little bit like, I thought we were going to talk about abortion, democracy, and the planet, but then the hot sound guy texts her.
And once again, I guess it's just comedy. I think this scene is weird. And also, like, shouldn't stepmoms be on another list? No, stepmoms are still moms. I don't know. It's an interesting scene.
There's a lot happening here, but the thing I actually kind of appreciated was I think that what they were doing here is saying that two things can be true. You can be someone who cares about abortion, the planet, and democracy, and also be someone who likes to sit with their girlfriends and gossip.
Correct. Yeah. And we're back in the recording studio, and this is where I took issue with Gary.
Okay.
Because he has this thing of like, is she taking a pause? And then like, I think maybe it's too slow now. And I kind of want to be like, let her speak at whatever pace she has to speak at. You can fix it later. Those listening to this right now, you have no idea how much I change from when we record to what you end up hearing. Like, you can speed things up. You can make things sound faster. I was a little annoyed with him in this moment.
I just wrote Gary's being very sweet.
Oh, we have.
But I guess we disagree.
We had very different feelings on this. That's okay. Different opinions. And we have a back of the head shot.
Mm.
It's an interesting camera shot of literally the back of Carrie's head. And Michael Patrick King was sort of talking about the filming of this scene and how this was sort of the most stylized they'd really ever gone, with like you hear the shower coming in.
Yeah.
The walls start to sort of close in and you actually see the words on the page begin to blur. And I do love the line of I'd forgotten how big he was.
Yeah, I definitely caught the water running. When that happened, I started to think this is getting real.
Yeah. And they're going to skip chapter 3 for now. Yeah. That's sort of the end of the scene is like, let's just come back to this. We can record the rest of it and come back to chapter 3 later.
Okay, so that's when I thought Gary was being sweet. I was like, okay.
Yeah, I get that. I just, once again, his being like, you're going to, I don't know. I just kind of was like, let her get through it and we'll deal with it later. But anyways, we get Carrie walking down East 69th Street past Paint Box.
Yes. Yep. I actually knew where that was. I knew what it was. It's just a fancy nail salon. Yeah, it's on 20 East 69th Street. And she sees Mitzi. Mitzi is very excited to see Carrie. Mitzi just got a facelift, but she still has a red upper lip from getting waxed.
It's Bitsy, right?
Bitsy, yeah, sorry.
There we go. That's all right.
I know it's Bitsy. I wrote Mitzi. I'm going to say Mitzi. And that's happened one time. I bought these like at-home waxing strips. And I did it before a shift, which was smart. And then I had this square red line above my...
I guess I need to point out that we once again have Bitsy screaming Carrie's name, even after Carrie's seen her. Like, Carrie acknowledges her, and the Bitsy's like, Carrie! Carrie! Like, yeah, she's coming towards you. You don't have to scream her name anymore.
Mike, we've worked at restaurants for a very long time. How many times?
It happens all the time.
When you're walking, when, like, someone's waiting for someone,
you.
And the person sits down, you're walking to them. You're actually talking to the person, and the other one's like, she's here now! She's here! And you're like... Yeah, I'm taking her order.
It's so weird. And we talk about the $100,000 facelift. Do we think this actress actually had a facelift?
Julie Halston? I don't know. I follow her on Instagram. I could do some detective work. It's probably just like tape, like face tape.
I think so too. I was going to say, like, I don't feel like she's had the work done because she looks great. I don't mean that in a bad way. I was just sort of like, she looks very natural. I think she looks great. And we found out that Bitsy's pre-ordered the book. She's excited to see what Carrie has to teach the rest of them who have lost a husband. And this is Carrie's just sort of being like, you know, I fell apart. Mm-hmm. That she thought she was doing so well. And that she got through that whole first year.
But then Bitsy lets her know that the second year is worse than the first. You know, it's just awful. And I think that that's true for a lot of things. Like, big things in life. I think the first year is sometimes just about trying to get through it, trying to do the thing. And then the second year for Carrie's probably a bit more like, oh, I have to just live life now without this person.
And this is where I maybe cry, because I don't know how much I've talked about on this podcast losing my mom a little over a year ago. But, you know, I lost my mom 2 Februarys ago. And in fact, I think about the fact that we recorded one of our final episodes of the first season, like the day before my mom's service, I think. Maybe it was the day after.
I think it was, because I had just, like, we can say it now because it's been a year later. I had literally just dumped somebody who had left my apartment like 5 minutes before, because they were not only talking to me, I had found out. And you had just, I think you had just left the day. It was the day after your mom's funeral. And we were like, okay.
I think it was, yeah.
Here we go.
Here we go. Let's record this thing. Yeah. I think it turned out pretty well.
Yeah, no one knew. No one said it.
Coming from. No one knew.
No one said, Elise, it sounds like you were just being two-timed and Mike just buried his mother. So I think everything went well.
And I have to say, like, I was very affected by this storyline, because the second year has been really, really, really hard. I just the other day, walking down the streets of Manhattan, listening to Laura Dern talking about her mom on Fresh Air, I was just sort of openly weeping walking down the street. And it is that thing where you never know when grief is going to sort of take your breath away. So I felt like I related to this a little bit, and it felt very real to me.
Yeah, I haven't lost a parent. I've lost people in my life, and I lost one of my best friends, God, like 7 years ago, maybe even 8 years ago. I can't even, but like, I have his picture on the wall, and I always, like, I think of him every single day. And there's so many things in life that happen where sometimes it'll just like catch me by surprise and I'll just start like crying. And I think what Mitzi says, Bitsy's
honey, the second year is worse than the first. That's the dirty little secret nobody tells you, because time is passing, and whatever's happening, you know, good, bad, weird, he's missing all of it. So you feel farther and farther away from him. It's just awful. I'll pass along a saying I heard in my Kabbalah class.
Okay.
The hole never fills, but new life will grow around it. So, your job is to do whatever you need to plant some seeds.
And I'm sorry, Mike, we all are here for you. We love you.
Thank you. And we'll revisit it, because there are moments later on that really brought me back to this. And Bitsy saying that time is passing and he's missing all of it, and you feel further and further away. And some days she's just faking it. God, most days I feel like I'm faking it. Yeah, it felt very relatable to me. Mm-hmm. So Carrie shops and she gets lots of shoes.
I love this segue, because it says Bitsy says to Carrie, you do whatever you do to make yourself feel better. And immediately Carrie's just kicking open her apartment door. It's so old school Sex in the City, with tons of bags of Bergdorf shoes.
Yeah, and the point was made in the podcast that Sarah Jessica says that Carrie bought, what is it, like 60 shoes, and she's going to return 56 of them or something like that.
Yeah.
She just bought a bunch and she'll return most of them, which, okay, good for you. And she picks up her book and can't read it and has a thought.
Mm-hmm.
And so she calls Gary Schneider and says she has COVID.
And I don't know if this happened with your captions, but the way it did with mine was she tried to read her book out loud. She can't. Then my captions say, mischievous music plays. So I knew that she was up to something here. So yeah, she says she tested positive for COVID, which actually, I mean, I'm sure we all experienced this was a thing. Like, I remember working with someone who got fired because they lied about having COVID. Like, it became, it was a thing. People would lie.
Yeah. And we get Miranda leaving T-Mobile and she notices a tattoo shop and she wants to capture who she is right now. And so maybe a robot tattoo. And I'm like, don't get a robot tattoo.
Yeah, maybe a robot tattoo would be great. I like that Ricky and Miranda have had some conversations. You can tell that they've already talked for like 25 to 30 minutes before this. We do hear in this moment from Ricky that Miranda isn't at the corporate law firm anymore. So that kind of answers your question a little bit. He's got some fun robots. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a quick scene where then she leaves and calls Carrie to say that she's on the precipice
of doing something stupid or liberating.
And maybe it's Scientology, but it's not. It's a tattoo.
Yeah, Miranda.
And sort of like, why not? Miranda's scared of commitment.
Yeah, that was a little, yeah, that one was a little bit like, oh, I thought that was just Seema and Carrie, but who knows? I don't know.
Yeah. And Carrie says it's time to come back to New York, but Miranda says that she's enjoying her pretend life out here.
I like this line about it's her pretend life, because it's kind of a way of acknowledging all the stuff we've talked about. That, like, what is Miranda doing? Like, doesn't she remember she has a life? And, you know, throughout these episodes, I think they're acknowledging a lot of the criticism that people are saying, and not saying we're sorry, but no, this is why we're doing this.
It's also, I have to continuously remind myself that it's been like a month.
Yes.
Because in my mind, I'm like, Miranda, you've been in California for a year and a half. Yeah. She hasn't. It's been a month.
Yeah. And then Carrie tells her she has COVID, and Miranda says, you bury the lead. And I didn't know that lead.
Thank you. Have the same note written down right here.
Yeah. So lead is spelled L-E-D-E. And then I Googled it and I was like, wait, is lead a different thing from like L-E-A-D, like you're leading the band? And no, it's the same word, but we spell it lead because that way back in old timey times when they were doing a lot of reporting, it wouldn't get confused with lead.
Yes. So you don't want to bury the lead. Mm-mm. You're burying the lead.
Yes.
Makes sense. When you look at it, it makes sense. And yeah, what about a robot? And Carrie's thing is just nowhere that it can be seen.
Right. And then we get more mischievous music playing as Carrie puts on a balloon shoe.
I did not understand this, and it's literally a balloon shoe.
It's a balloon
literally
shoe.
A shoe that features a deflating balloon.
Yeah, and it's it was made by the brand Loewe. It's spelled like L-O-E-W-E, but it is pronounced Loewe. And I don't know how much they sold for. The Saks website said around the $300 to $400 range, but they're sold out. But they're reselling now for about $1,300.
Nuts. And Charlotte calls, and what can I bring? And she's already sent Versanos, which I had never heard of before, which is hilarious because I basically walk by it every single day that I go to work.
Yeah, it's interesting because I had never heard of it before, but I've actually been there and bought things from there.
Have you? That's so funny.
Yeah, when my mom was in town and we were in the West Village, she wanted to get something for my dad. And we walked by this cute little chocolate shop and they were so nice and the chocolates were delicious. And Carrie orders the salted caramels, which I Googled it to see. They would be about $44 for the large box to have delivered.
Yeah, they're not cheap, but not. But like, I also want the salted caramels, so like, we should go get some.
Yeah, it's not that expensive, and honestly, it's not that. I think it's 44. I think you're getting a lot, and they're delivering.
Also,
them.
Once again, like, had to look it up, did not know what it was, and then was like, oh, I've definitely walked by that 1,000 times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we get Seema looking at Birkins that are all around $30,000. I don't know.
That's it's what
hard.
I said. Yeah,
it's
they're
hard
resale.
For me to wrap my brain around it.
Yeah. Yeah, she's, and at first I was wondering what was happening here. We get Seema smoking in bed. We get her looking at the Birkins. They're obviously reselling Birkins. I thought maybe she was looking for her Birkin online.
That's what I thought as well. I thought she was trying to find her own.
Yeah, like who's trying to resell it. And then we cut to Seema and Anthony at Avena Ristorante, which is on 22 East 66th Street. And Anthony's making a comment about the $24 gazpacho. And I had the thought here, because he also made the comment in the first episode about rich people problems. Is Anthony going to be our quote unquote relatable person?
Maybe. I don't know. We get the bag has sentimental value, and the trick once sold Anthony's father's gold money clip right in front of him because he was handcuffed. So I'm not sure if he's the relatable one or not.
Well, relatable in the sense of like money stuff.
I do think about how like restaurants, especially in New York, are just really expensive now.
They really are. I'm on the Avena website, but I don't see a menu. I was trying to see if gazpacho
they had
was
expensive gazpacho.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Seema's going to text Carrie because she's running late. And Carrie's wordling and eating a burger and wearing a New York Monopoly long sleeve shirt.
Mike and I send each other our Wordle every day.
Right around 12:05 at night.
Yeah. And and we also have another friend on the Wordle chain. And sometimes we'll make jokes with each other and we get it wrong. But Mike takes it very seriously that it has nothing to do with one's intelligence.
It's not about being smart. You either guess the word or you don't. It's not an intelligent thing. Yeah.
But when Mike gets it in two or three, he gets very excited.
It's exciting. Yeah. Come on. When they get it in two, that's an exciting thing. And Carrie responds that she has COVID, which is off trend for her. Mm-hmm. And I guess this is where we establish that Carrie never had COVID.
Carrie is the Mike Jensen.
I've never had COVID. I shouldn't say that because now who knows, but very bizarre that I've never tested positive for COVID, and I do think that I should be studied.
I am a three-time COVID award-winning champion.
Yes. Elise just gets the COVID over and over again.
Yeah.
We have the moms at school talking about the list now.
Yeah, and this is where I had some problems.
See, I'm going to be the unpopular one here because I thought this was all fine.
The moms are in the hallway talking about the MILF list and then making fun of the kids.
Well, okay, that part wasn't okay.
And then Charlotte finally speaks up because they're like, is it this Milo or is it that Milo? Like, they're trying to figure it out. Then Charlotte finally speaks up. And as she's speaking up, this kid emerges from the bathroom, who we're assuming is Milo, and this song is playing in the background with the lyrics like, and the lyrics are like, damn you fine bitch. And I'm just absolutely not.
I thought it was funny. I do like that we have like the Zoom crowd here. This is Deirdre and Ainsley. These are all actresses from the first season. And yeah, who heard it was Milo, and it Milo H for hot. This is he, for the record, the actor is of age.
Okay.
He's playing a teenager. Listen, I understand the way in which it is problematic. It can happen. I'm just saying. I also think it's a comment on them being sort of surprised by this awkward kid who, you know, wore a back brace up until last year and now doesn't anymore. And perhaps they're just impressed by his development.
I don't like any of it. I didn't like it. I'm going to start my own PTA that is absolutely not.
And why do I feel like Blanche DuBois? And I don't really know why she feels like Blanche DuBois. And we have the Arbor School is sending a message that there is zero tolerance and it's going to stay on his record through the college application process. And Charlotte and LTW think this is extreme and the gays agree.
Well, yeah, I wrote Charlotte and LTW are advocating with Milo to not be in trouble, which feels kind of weird. Because are they only advocating for him because they thought he was hot?
Yeah.
Like, I really don't know what's happening here. And then it was overheard that a group of Arbor School mothers were heard objectifying a male student in the hallway.
Were they?
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, you pervy ladies, sit down.
And the gays think that they should be numbers one and two. So now we're at a live studio taping.
Yeah, welcome to Warner Brothers Studio for this live studio taping. And Brady's calling from Amsterdam. And he's been trying to call.
He's been calling since yesterday. And did you notice the Dandelion shirts in the background?
No, but I
didn't notice until my third viewing. And okay. Then I was like, oh, look, Dandelion shirts.
And do they look like they would be either Fanilows or Claymates?
Well, I cut that out of the last episode, so that won't make any sense in this one.
Okay, well, I have a theory, everyone. And apparently Mike doesn't want me to share it. That if you are a Dandelion, you are probably also a Fanilow. Or a Claymate, which means a Barry Manilow fan or a Claymate.
Interesting Venn diagram.
Mm-hmm.
And he's crying and Louisa broke up with him and then a car almost hit me and I wish it had.
And she's kind of snapped back to life in this moment. And I think that, you know, she's like, call me as soon as you get to the hostel. And as this is all happening, the security for the show is like, take your phone and put it in this bag and seal it. And we know what's going to happen here.
Yeah, I literally wrote, all phones must be off and placed in a bag. And we know where this is going.
Yeah. And so Miranda puts her phone down her pants.
And says she doesn't have a phone because she lost it. And she's never felt more relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
And this actress is D.L. Sams, and I mostly point it out because we're going to get to an interesting fact later.
Okay.
And Amanda calls with Carrie in a face mask. Oh, yeah. What are these face masks that look just like drooping meat on your face? Have you ever done one of those before?
Yeah. So they're called like sheet masks, and you buy them, and they really what they are is they're just like a piece of paper. Or some of them, I guess, are like more jelly. And you can just lay the whole thing on your face and the product is already on the paper. So you don't have to like put it on. You just let it sit there. There's actually a tradition with me and my friends, Tom and Ben, where we put these on and listen to Janis Ian every Christmas.
Okay.
On vinyl. So that's a thing. And then one time a friend of mine put one on that was a unicorn face mask and it made his whole face swell up. So don't do that.
Interesting. Well, Amanda got Carrie an extra week because the book deserves the authenticity of her voice.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see how she's feeling next week.
Yeah. And Carrie is not too happy about this. And Amanda is at Rosencrantz Florist and Cafe, which is on Greenwich Avenue. I thought maybe she was at the Plant Shed, which is another type of coffee/flower shop. But she's not.
Do we think Amanda knows that she's faking it?
Yes. 100%.
Yes. Okay. I thought that as well.
And Michael Patrick King kind of confirms that.
He did, yeah. He sort of alluded to that.
Yeah.
And we're at the taping, and we talk about, you know, when cousin Lenny came out as gay, and there's a lot of putt-putt jokes. And I wrote, BD is insufferable.
Yeah, BD is loving this moment, but Michael Patrick King talks about that
yes.
On the podcast, too, about how he's been on sitcoms. And they wanted this sitcom to purposely be over the top. They kept saying, go bigger. And they thought Tony Danza did a brilliant job of just being over the top, yet believable in the sitcom way. And how he's been on sets where you watch, where he's seen the writers huddle around the monitor watching and, like, also mouthing their own words and just loving it and being so into it. And I like when Tony Danza says, you want to be non-binary, be non-binary.
Binary. It really did. Yeah. I was like, okay, that's a pronunciation there.
And I love that he says Che has a Bob's Big Boy haircut.
So good. So good.
Because that's true. In Michigan, they were just called Big Boys, but yes.
And then we get to the emotional part where Che is supposed to cry. And I wrote, the totally unexpected happens.
Yes. I said, I know what's going to happen and I'm stressed. And then I was like, Miranda's phone. I'm stressed. I was stressed when it was going off. I had just been to a yoga class that day where this teacher is like, in the beginning of the class, the teacher is like, if you have a metal water bottle, leave it outside because I don't like the sound they make. Like, please put all your phones on silent. And anytime a phone goes off in that class, I just get stressed out. I'm like, oh no.
Fun fact, the performance that I saw Cynthia Nixon in for Rabbit Hole on the Broadway with my parents,
mm-hmm.
someone's phone went off during a very emotional scene. And at the end of the show, it was during the week where they collect money. And she said, like, perhaps the person whose phone went off should give some money here. Anyways, I just thought it was sort of funny that I'm like, Cynthia Nixon knows better, but Miranda doesn't.
Collecting money for Broadway Cares Equity Fights Age.
Correct.
Not just taking money.
Not just for fun.
Yeah, all I can say, Miranda, is you're lucky that this was Che Diaz's show and not Patti LuPone's.
Because Patti LuPone would have had a lot to say to you. Because
mm-hmm.
who do you think you are?
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote, BD yells at the audience, which seems like a bad move.
Yeah.
Because they are going to have to go back to taping. Like, maybe don't yell at your audience.
Yeah. And then Miranda screams, my son is in crisis.
Yes. Tony tries to calm the situation and BD does not.
Yeah. Yeah. And then BD has to shame Che, which I thought was
terrible. Terrible. Yeah. We're never going to get back there because Che's a stand-up, not an actor. And I wrote, well, so I have three sentences in a row. One is, Tony is clearly the only professional here. Mm-hmm. And then I wrote, other than the warm-up guy. And then I wrote, though he does mess up the pronouns.
Yeah. I said, Tony Dadza. I'm trying to make it happen. Tony Dadza keeping it cool. BD is shaming Miranda, saying Che isn't an actor. Jack the Hype Man needs to quit misgendering Che.
Which I do want to take this moment to say that I did misgender in the last episode one time. I didn't hear it until it came out, so I do apologize. I do take it seriously. We try very hard, but I did mess up in the last episode, so I apologize for that. I do like at the end of the scene where it's DL Sams saying that she believed her, who's the security guard who Miranda said that she didn't have her phone. But I also, just fun fact, the outdoor scenes at Warner Brothers were filmed at Warner Brothers in LA, and the inside the studio scenes were filmed at a studio in New York, which I think is interesting because that means that this actress performed both in LA and then in New York.
That's wild.
So quite the bit part there that she got to perform on both coasts.
And then Miranda is on the phone with Charlotte. And I like this. At first I was thinking, oh, it's interesting that Miranda and Charlotte seem to be having all these moments now. And then I realized, oh, they're both mothers.
Right. And that was the idea, that you would call Charlotte in this moment because she's a mother. Yeah. So Brady's flying in. And so this is where we find out Miranda's flying back to New York. And that in this moment, there's nothing more important.
Except for maybe Richard Burton's little rain outfit and those shoes.
Dogs in shoes, man.
Yeah.
And we're at Carrie's and Seema is there with lunch. And I like that Carrie fakes it for a moment and then very quickly is like, I don't have COVID.
Yeah, and Seema's happy because her Louis Vuitton mask is fashionable but probably doesn't do anything.
Such a thing that, like, I feel like the masks that I wear are not even the masks you're supposed to wear at this point.
No. And Carrie and Seema are having rosé and talking about loss. And Seema is equating her bag to Carrie's loss of Big.
Well, first of all, did you at all kind of bump against the line where Carrie says that she's lied to her two oldest friends?
No.
Only because in reality, she met Samantha first.
Okay, but Samantha isn't her friend currently.
Sure. And that was just the thing that I thought about when this line happened. Yeah. Like, okay, so that's where we're going with this. That's what's happening. Yeah, Carrie feels bad about lying to her publisher. And the idea that there's an expiration date on how much grief a friend can support.
No, but they've already been so there for me. You know, I just can't put them through more of this. I mean, there's got to be like an expiration date on how much grief you can ask a friend to support.
Well, not if they're true friends. I wasn't there for the first round, but I am now. I'm all ears.
I hate feeling sorry for myself.
Carrie, something horrible happened to you. You are allowed to feel sorry for yourself. And if you don't want to go out of this house, don't. Just crawl into that bed, lay down, pull the covers over your head, and you just feel whatever you need to feel.
No. I'm not a take to the bed type.
Oh, girl, you're strong. I was in a fetal position over a handbag.
No, not just a handbag, a Birkin. It was your Birkin, it meant something to you.
Not that I'm equating the two losses, but...
You kind of are.
I am.
This was another one that hit me, because I don't think that I've been super shy. I mean, if I brought up every time I was sad, you would never hear the end of it. But I've certainly felt able to open up to my friends when I'm having particularly low moments. And yeah. I think it's interesting that we establish in Carrie a person who is maybe not as comfortable in sharing her grief with her friends or sharing the truth with her friends. Like the fact that she felt the need to lie to Charlotte about having... She could have said to Charlotte, like, I told my publisher I have COVID. I don't really, but I said it. But she felt like she had to continue the lie, which I think is an interesting character trait. And yeah, something horrible happened. And you're allowed to not want to leave the house. And Carrie isn't a take to the bed type. And yes, now I'm equating the two losses. And we get a text from Lisette.
And her show is tonight. And Carrie's going to go because Lisette doesn't know Carrie has fake COVID. And in this moment, I thought that Gary was going to be at Lisette's show. Like, I thought that's where the plot was going to go, where somehow Carrie's fake COVID was going to bite her in the ass. But no,
So we're back at the Warner Brothers studio, and Che is being led to their trailer.
And Miranda approaches and said she tried going back, and I was like, there's no late seating in a live taping, Miranda.
Yeah, of course not. I wrote, she couldn't get back into the taping, duh.
Yeah. And then there's this, Che screams, you ruined the family scene.
Yeah, she had her own family scene, and it was real. And we're going to get into a couple of moments where it feels like trading barbs, but I don't think that it's meant that way.
No.
Like, I don't think Miranda means to cut her with the idea that her family thing was real. I also don't think that she means to cut her with, my kid's the most important thing, and you don't know what that feels like.
Yeah. I surprisingly didn't think this scene ended terribly. Like, I wasn't like, what's going to happen?
I didn't either.
Yeah,
I thought that they brought it to a pretty good place, because as sort of ugly as the scene feels, and I do want to state really quickly, I don't want to have a kid, but I would love to have a TV show, and I would care about my TV show as much as someone would care about their kid. So, you know, take that as you want.
Mm-hmm.
But I like Miranda's thing of, like, can we not say goodbye on a yucky note like this? And that as tense as things were and as bad as the situation is, even Che is able to say, okay, I hope that Brady's okay. And Miranda's able to say the only thing a person doing a TV show wants to hear, which is that the show's going to be huge. So we do end on a not yucky note,
right.
And I did like that.
And then we get to Carrie and Seema at Bryant Park for Lizette's show. And these, I could be wrong, but I believe that these domes are that, like, the show is in are normally the domes that you can eat in outside during the winter.
That is what they look like.
Okay.
Yeah, funny. And this is the worst Bellini ever. And I wanted to be like, yeah, because it looks like it's just peach nectar. A note on champagne cocktails. They should mostly be champagne.
Right. And also, like, I don't think that's a nighttime, wintry outdoor drink, but that's just me.
Well, I don't think that it's winter. I just think that we associate those things with winter.
Oh, yeah. Well, also, I don't think that's a nighttime. I just think of Bellini as brunch, but.
Yeah. Yeah. Whenever someone orders a Bellini or a mimosa at dinner, I'm like, oh, you're in the wrong.
Yeah. Do you know where you are?
Period. Yeah. And why is that cater waiter picking up the jewelry? This scene is so weird.
Yeah.
This scene is so bizarre to me. I did not understand. This person is stealing the jewelry and then is threatening Carrie and Seema, but he doesn't have a weapon. Like, they could literally be like, I'm not giving you my necklace, and walk away. Like, it's such a weird.
Yeah, I was very taken aback. And I get that we'll get to there about, like, why isn't there security? But I guess we get there. But there would be more than just two random security guards for a jewelry show like this. And then Seema whips out a gun that's actually a lighter, and the guy runs away, but then no one's doing anything.
It's so weird. It's such a bizarre scene.
Pretty much all you need to know about this scene is that a cater waiter has stolen all of the jewelry.
Yeah.
That's it.
Executed strangely, but that's what happened. And you can't smoke in here. And I don't want her to smoke in there either, but I do support her thing of, like, oh, I'm the problem.
Yeah.
Like, I'm the issue right now.
And Seema is really just taking over what Carrie used to do, which is smoke everywhere. Smoke in your computer, smoke in your bed, smoke in your car, smoke in the horse's face in their stable. Like, that was Carrie. So Seema's just doing that now.
And we get to Miranda on the couch, and this is where we see the tattoo that she ended up with.
Which is just an MH, which is bringing her back to who she is and who she always was. Miranda Hobbs.
And Brady arrives, and, you know, this is another one. Because part of me's dead inside and is like, calm down. It's just a breakup. You're fine. But I get his thing of, like, everybody's breaking up.
Right. His parents.
Like, I do think this is compounded. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. He's just really sad for his. I think it's more about Miranda and Steve than it is about him and Louisa. And Miranda says, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah. And we get traffic stopped in Seema's neighborhood, so she's just going to walk because it's around the corner, and she stops to pet a dog.
Well, whenever this happens in the city, whenever, like, because this will happen a lot, where you just get stuck behind a garbage truck, or you get stuck behind in traffic, and a lot of times people are like, I'll just get out and walk, which is fine, but I always feel bad for the cab driver, because now they're stuck.
Well, this is where I also, this isn't a cab, is it? Does she have a personal driver?
Sure, but then I feel bad for her personal driver, because now they're stuck.
Yeah. And then she sees her bag.
Yeah.
It's fine. I'll go with it. This feels insane.
Yeah, I don't
sure.
think, I mean, I, especially on the Upper East Side, I don't think an Hermes bag would just, like, they would know what that is.
No one else saw that?
Yeah.
No one else saw that bag there?
No one saw that bright orange bag?
It's fine. I'll go with it. Carrie's at Lizette's door with chocolates, and she lets herself in, and Lizette is in bed.
And they lay together.
Everything she worked so hard to make is gone. And, you know, the closest that I could come to really, because I'm, you know, I write, and I write songs, and there was one time that I'd, like, written an entire song song and I'd done the vocals, and then somehow I erased the entire file. And I did have that moment of like, I can never recreate that. I can never make that happen again. And I literally had to just take a breath and then just start again and do it all over the best that I could. So I do understand the devastation of creating something and losing it. This does feel like a lot of work that she must have put into to lose it all.
And I did have two thoughts here. I thought, is she going to regift those chocolates without saying that they're from her friend Charlotte? And then when she got in bed with Lizette, I was like, are Carrie and Lizette going to end up together in my And Just Like That fan fiction? But they don't.
At some point, we'll have to get up, but not now. And we're back in the studio and Carrie gets through the chapter. Mm-hmm. And that's all she wrote.
And she finishes chapter three.
And it's funny how I watched this episode three times. And all three times, I thought this was going to be the end of the episode.
Me too.
And it's not. We have one more scene where it's Seema and Carrie at dinner, toasting to New York, the good and the bad. They're at a communal table.
Hate a communal table.
They're the worst. They're terrible.
I absolutely hate when they're at Flex Muscles, which is on 81st Street and 3rd Avenue.
Which you've walked by before, I think.
You guys, I'm breaking my life anonymity here. This restaurant is on my block. And I remember them setting up to film this, and I had no idea what they were filming because they used to film like a cooking show in this empty building down the street from me. And I would walk by and see it. So I just assumed that's what was happening. And this is obviously an overnight shoot. So I wouldn't have been able to have any idea it was going on anyway. But I am so angry. Like, I don't know. And there weren't trailers or anything set up. The trailers were probably down, like, on a different street or whatever. But how? That's like a noob move.
Literally steps.
Yeah.
Steps away.
Steps away from my apartment. Seema and Carrie were having drinks with Australians. And you know what? Maybe it's glad I wasn't out there because I could have gotten COVID for a fourth time.
And is that what it is? That's the reveal here, is that these Aussies kind of invite themselves over. And just like that,
I got COVID.
I got COVID.
Yeah.
So curious as to whether that's going to be a thing in the next episode. I don't know.
Yeah. And, you know, watching these things, I'm kind of reminded of a couple things. Like when I was thinking of the I Couldn't Help But Wonder, I was thinking about how Sex and the City is kind of, is it procedural, or what's the one where you kind of forget what happened the episode before?
Procedural, yeah. is that where like every it's the opposite of being a serial, basically.
Yeah, and Sex and the City has aspects of that where like big things happen every episode and we just kind of don't talk about it again. Like I was just thinking, oh, I guess we kind of closed up the fact that, you know, Charlotte doesn't care so much about Lily's dress. Like, I guess that's just not a thing we're going to, like, go back to bringing back in this moment.
It's interesting because at this point, I'm certain that they write every episode before they start filming. And maybe I'm wrong in that, but I think that they do. And usually when that happens, it is much more of a through storyline.
Right.
But we're not doing that. Yeah, you're really right that much like Sex and the City was, a big thing can happen in one episode and then we just kind of never talk about it again.
Yeah, I mean, I think we keep the relationships. Like, that's the only thing. But other than that, like, big life things will happen. It's like the Met Ball. We never talked about what happened at the Met Ball, you know?
Right.
And we never talk about Lily's dress again, even though that was the whole premise of that episode, you know? And another interesting thing they're doing with marketing is they are releasing. So I thought for sure we were going to see Aiden in this episode because how they're doing the stuff on Instagram is the thing they released before we watched this episode was this little montage of everyone being like, who's Aiden? It's her ex-fiance. And so I thought for sure we were going to see Aiden. But no, I bet you Aiden's not going to be until episode 7 and Samantha will be in episode 8. So that way we watch this whole thing. And I'm enjoying it. You know, I got a few comments about how people enjoy listening to our podcast because of the fact that we appreciate it and we don't hate watch it. And I think something that I'm just reminded over and over again, especially with listening to MPK's podcast, is like Sex and the City, all of these things that they're talking about have happened to people, have happened to the writers. So just because it doesn't you don't identify with it or you think it's outrageous doesn't mean that it's not real.
Yeah, it's what I try to remind myself as well, that there are moments that I'm like, what is happening? But that happens in real life, that you have moments in your real life where you're like, what is happening right now? So
yeah.
I do try to lean into that. I think for me, what I couldn't help but wonder is why Carrie doesn't feel like she can be honest with her friends.
I think in that moment for her, I think it was just so soon. Like, I think Charlotte called her so soon after she had just lied that she didn't figure out she's like, oh, I have COVID. And now she's like, I have to roll with this. And then I think she settles down and is like, well, Charlotte's not going to tell Gary. Like, I could have told her, you know.
Right.
And she probably eventually does.
And interesting, you know, one last note that I want to make is that, as I talked about last week, this week, Niall Cunningham, who plays Brady Hobbs, also has graduated to the main credit sequence.
Kudos, Niall. And it's funny, when I saw Niall, especially when I saw him crying, I was like, you kind of look like Steve here. And then I was like, at least they're not actually related.
It's good casting, though.
No, it's great casting. And also, by the time this episode is out, we will have released our first episode on our Patreon of You've Got Mail, which, fun fact, I keep wanting to call 10 Things I Hate About You. Completely different film. But it is You've Got Mail. And for all of you WCHBW listeners that are not Patreon subscribers yet, the first episode is already in your feed to just listen to.
It's already happened. Check it out. See what we're doing. Also, randomly yesterday, I happened to walk by the garden where Tom Hanks's character revealed to Meg Ryan that he had been the one the whole time. And I took a little picture, so we'll post that too.
Spoilers.
Sorry, it's the end of this end of the movie. But, you know, come on, you knew it was going
to
happen.
And, fun fact, I happened to walk by the Barnes & Noble that Fox Books was based off of the other day and out loud said, "You are the enemy."
That's a lot. All right, check it out. We'll be back next week
to discuss Chapter 4.
Yeah, it's not called that. No. But I can't think of what it's
called
now.
That's what I'm calling it.
All right. Okay. Later.
Bye.
You can subscribe to our new Patreon-only podcast, We Couldn't Help But Wonder, Still Wondering, right now. For more information, like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at We Couldn't Help But Wonder with no caps, no spaces, and no punctuation, and Twitter at WCHBW Podcast. And don't forget to check out my new podcast with Vanya Arslanian, Mike and Vanya Can't Not. You can follow Elise at Evie Castle and me at MikeJensen77. We would love if you would share this podcast with someone, put up a link or tell a friend, take a moment and rate us on Apple Podcasts, or even better, write a review there. Most importantly, stay safe, and let's all take care of each other. We'll be back next week with Alive!
You know, she makes the jost.
She makes the jost.
She makes the Colin jost. Why isn't there surgery?
Why isn't there surgery? It's a good question.
Why isn't there security? But I guess we get there.